Hello, and welcome to Pitch and Play, a podcast about actually playing the games that your friends recommend, for the most part. My name is Cassie.
And my name is Ross.
And this week we are talking about The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past, which came out in 1992 on the SNES. And Ross, can you remind us what you said 2 weeks ago and why you wanted me to play A Link to the Past? Tell us the background.
Yeah, so A Link to the Past is the third installment in the Legend of Zelda series, top-down adventure puzzle type game where you explore dungeons and defeat evil. Very classic fantasy. And I pitched it as an idea of this is a classic, and you mentioned about having a very deep connection to the Zelda series,
yeah.
Thanks to your partner. Well, wanting to get into the Zelda series, I suppose, and learn more about it, especially because of randomizer speedruns and stuff. So yeah, I thought this would be a great game for you to look back at and see how you feel with modern eyes. Classics always controversial for most, so I'm curious to see what you think.
Okay. Yes. What did I think? So to also recap a little bit of what we talked about, I have a weird, jumpy history with the Zelda series. I have played, I would say, like maybe half of the Zelda games.
And
it's always been a series that I'm like, you know, Zelda's important. People like Zelda. When you think of like the tentpole video games, Zelda, Mario, Call of Duty, all in the same kind
I'm
of
always
mixing
thinking that.
Pot. Yeah, those are the three. I couldn't think of any others besides Zelda and Mario. Pokemon. Yeah, so like Zelda is important.
Yes.
I have never clicked with Zelda, except for the Phantom Hourglass, which I played all the way through. Really liked that
with.
Game. Yeah, that's the one. That's like the entry point, you know? That's the gateway Zelda.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Everybody hates that game. That one, I think, is maybe like a notch above Spirit Tracks for a lot of people. And people really don't like Spirit Tracks. So I have always been curious about the Zelda series. And I've always kind of felt like, you know, maybe there's just one out there that like will grab me. And that'll be what gets me into Zelda. And people speak so fondly of A Link to the Past. So when we were making up our list of games to talk about on this podcast, we put A Link to the Past on there.
Yes.
Let me tell you about my experience playing A Link to the Past. Today is Sunday. I started this game today on Sunday because I was like, you know, it's a lazy Sunday, spending the day on the couch, relaxing. Let me play A Link to the Past. Let me start it. I may have a fever right now, so that might be an asterisk on my experience playing A Link to the Past. Might be running a low-grade fever, might have the flu. I'll let you know. But I played through, you know, they put, you wake up and Zelda's like, Link, come save me. I'm in the dungeon. So you go to the castle and, you know, I was making my way through the castle. I was doing okay. My partner was sitting next to me on the couch. I was wandering through the castle and we saw the lightning door. And he said, oh, I think you can do something with that now. And I said, did I ask?
Is this the fever talking or is this you?
He also has a fever. but that is normally how I speak. So I swung my sword at it a couple times, couldn't figure it out, walked past it. He looked up. He's like, sorry, I was wrong. I wandered around the castle some more, couldn't figure out what to do. Eventually killed the one guy that dropped the key that I needed to pass through the door. I rescued Zelda, carried on. And I was like, all right, you know, I'm getting through it. You know, it's only the first level. Let's keep an open mind. I wandered around a bit, went to Kakariko Village, and I enjoyed that. I liked wandering around the village. I liked talking to the people. Then I went to the dungeon, and I remembered why I don't like Zelda games.
Please tell me that you're putting like all this Dramatic background music, yeah. And then that sudden cut of, yeah. Like, and then I went to the dungeon.
Yeah, the Zelda theme to this point has been playing I can't think of the Zelda theme right now, but the Zelda theme has been playing, and now I'm going to switch to, like, evil music. So I went to the dungeon. Zelda games really are just walking from room to room and, like, maybe looking at the right thing and, like, maybe beating the guy that will drop the key. But, like, it's not fun. These games are not fun to me. Like, the object of these games to me is, like, dodge as many enemies as I can, because there's no reason to fight them. I'm just going to get hurt. And then I realize, oh, wait, that one guy I did have to fight because he was holding the key this whole time that would let me progress. So I don't like that. I don't have, and maybe I'm impatient. I like puzzles. I play, like, Picross all the time, and I do crossword puzzles, but, like, something about Zelda puzzles just is not fun to me. I don't enjoy the process of, like, struggling against them. And usually what happens is, like, I struggle against it for a while, and then I either ask Joe or look it up on the internet what to do, and then it's done and I'm past it. When I have struggled against a puzzle for, like, an hour and then eventually figured it out on my own, it wasn't like a, oh yeah, that was it. It's not like a satisfying feeling. It's just, oh my God, it was that stupid. I also don't feel, I played this game on the SNES collection on my Switch. I also don't feel that it controls particularly well. And I don't think that the SNES had a joystick. I think it was still D-pad, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, the joypad didn't even get normalized till, if I remember right, like the PS2.
Like PS2, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, like, this game is not designed to be played with the controller that I was playing it with. I tried using the D-pad a bit, but just, like, it felt very imprecise in situations that, like, I would swing my sword at an enemy and be, like, right next to it and it wouldn't hit, or I would be facing the wrong way or something. And, like, so that was a struggle with it. And then also in my later, like, half hour of the game, I started using the rewind feature a lot on the SNES emulator, where, like, oh, that enemy hit me and I died, so I'm just going to, like, jump back a couple seconds and move in a different way or do something else. Mm-hmm. So I started using that a lot, and that removed any incentive to, like, have health. So I was just walking around with, like, a quarter heart all the time, and that fucking annoying beeping noise was playing all the time. Anyway, I got through the Eastern Palace. I was heading to the desert area, and I just, like, I was done. I closed the game and I loaded up Animal Crossing New Horizons and played that for the first time in a year and 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't like this game. And I maybe played 2 hours, and I know that there are a lot of people who are going to be really mad at hearing that, but I...
Yes, we have that big of an audience that, yes, we're going to have a big divide now.
Seven people who listen to us, but I...
People are going to be like, what the hell, Cass?
I want to say, and I think I'm going to catch heat for this, but I think the only people who like these games are people who are blinded by their nostalgia for it, or who trick themselves into liking it because they're like, but it's a classic. What do you think of this game, Ross?
So, funny enough, so I think I mentioned this last time when I was pitching it, but you were asking me about which Zelda game I first played, which order... Right. All that sort of stuff. And I actually went and did a bit of research because I was genuinely curious, because I felt like I'd played it earlier than the Game Boy Advance version, uh-huh. which is when this Link's Awakening was. And there were, A Link to the Past is the one we're talking about.
Which one is
and
Link's Awakening? And that got re-released.
Oh, that's a different one, which I would talk about.
Oh, yeah,
about,
that's actually. That's the Game Boy one.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Because I guess trying to get onto the popularity of the Zelda games at the time, a lot of the SNES games were released for the Game Boy Color as enhanced versions, which, you know, thinking of these days, that's common. Back then, that wasn't necessarily common, these ports with enhanced features. But it usually happened for the most popular games to start getting a wider audience. So, A Link to the Past, I would have played on the Game Boy Color, which means I would have been younger than 10, for sure, probably like 7 or 8. And I remember not liking this one that much either. at least to start off with, I definitely had played other Zelda games by this point, because I remember first playing this and hating the first dungeon. Because the first dungeon is essentially this, you go into the castle and you've got, I believe it's just a lantern or something, and yes, you're supposed to navigate through the hallways. And the reason I remember that this must not have been my first Zelda game is because I was like, this is going against the established formula and I don't like it. Because you have no sword, you have no, like, exploration that you're doing yourself. It's very pathed, so you're supposed to go in a particular way. And you can't really interact much.
Yeah.
It's weirdly sort of a cinematic moment, if you think about it, of just, like, you're going through this dark dungeon without any defenses, which for a game from 92 is pretty interesting to think about. But at the time, nah, didn't like it. So I think I pretty much quit at the same time as you did when I was younger. But back then, you didn't have as many games to choose from. So I would often swap out cartridges and, like, do what you did, play another game, and then I'd come back to it. And once I came back to it, I was like, okay, I'm through some of the progress. I can put up with some of the pain that this game has and keep pushing forward. And as you do, at least I did anyway, you feel that sense of, I guess, achievement in a way, of, or at least growing power, because once you start gaining more of the items throughout the game, the interesting stuff that you use in dungeons, you then start actually feeling like, oh, okay, maybe I use this to do that, maybe I use this to do that. And eventually you'll come to some sort of conclusion. You feel this sense of progression. I'm going to mention that every damn episode, aren't I? Good, well-designed progression. But yeah, essentially, it hit that rhythm. Like, I felt like I could finally start doing more things, or I found one item that I really liked and I kept to it. Now, what that would have been in this game, no idea, back then. But I will say, as much as it's a beloved classic, I do think it's one of the worst ones. But that is because I think it's one of the earliest attempts, right? So they didn't have it nailed then. They didn't have a good formula.
And I can see that. I can see how it is, like, foundational for the things that come next. But what you're saying about, like, the progression and you find the items that work for you, I know there's a lot of stuff in this game, but I got a lot of items. I got the bone arrow. I got the boomerang. I got the Pegasus boots. I got the ice rod. But all of those things just feel so limited to me.
Yes.
Like, I ran out of arrows, and so I couldn't do a, like, cave or something that I got to that required you to have arrows. And I couldn't find any arrows. So it was like, I guess I just don't get that treasure that's there. And God knows it was probably like 50 rupees, so whatever. But it just, like, as much as you have all those options, it still feels like the game is very railroaded into, like, well, but this is the one that you're supposed to use here. And yeah, I feel like that's what a lot of people praised Breath of the Wild for, because that game is so, so flexible of, like, well, there's, like, a lot of different ways that you can solve this shrine or approach combat. And people liked that flexibility a lot. And so I'm like, well, but this game is, like, inflexible almost to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was very much a game that required a certain order of things, and yeah, funnily enough, you can clearly tell that they knew that that wasn't the best approach, because things like A Link Between Worlds, which is sort of the direct sequel-ish, or at least
it's like a spiritual successor,
which literally the whole premise of that is that you have an item shop, essentially, of you get one, I can't quite remember the system in detail, but, like, you get one item from this shop, which is a dungeon type item that you get, like a bow and arrow or an ice rod or whatever equivalent would be. And you can, like, take that one out as rent and you have that one on you at all times.
Okay.
And so that means you have the flexibility of going, oh, I like that one, I'll pick that, I'll try that out. I don't like it, I'll swap it for another one. And you can tackle certain dungeons based on which one you rent, essentially. But as time goes on and as you gain money, you can buy out or, like, have multiple of these items. So your progression is very much open to you, and you can experiment with what you want to progress as. And I think that's a direct, like, response to this game, because it is so rigid in its progression and its pushing towards things, because I'm imagining a lot of criticism at the time would have been, if you can't do X section, you couldn't finish the game, which stopped people from exploring more of the later game. And that's some of the stuff I want to talk about as well, some of the later game that you wouldn't have got to. But that meant that they didn't actually get to the points that were interesting about the game and maybe would have hooked people more.
Yeah, and like I don't relish like turning the game off and saying like, no, I'm not going to finish this. And I definitely get what you're saying of like when you're a kid and you have three games, you can't just say like, well, whatever. And so it is a very much a modern problem and a privileged problem to have of like, I have all these games and I didn't like this one, so I'm going to play my other 600 games. You know, like we have so many choices today, like maybe too many choices. It sometimes feels like we have so many choices today that like, why would I choose to spend my time on a game that frustrates me, that like does not bring me any kind of joy, that just makes me kind of angry and like puts me in a bad mood? And I don't want to judge a game just on like one day of frustration, but this is the same experience that I have had with every other Zelda game that I have tried to play. Of like, I think specifically of Ocarina of Time, which I played quite a bit of, I would say. I also didn't get to the point where like things change and you become Adult Link. Like I played through a lot of the Kid Link stuff, but like by the time I got to the Water Temple and like knew the reputation of the Water Temple, I was just like, I'm done. Why would I continue to do this? Like there's nothing here that is redeeming to me or enjoyable to me. And that's sad. I don't want to be a hater. Like I don't want to hate every game that we play.
But all of our fans are saying that about you, Cass. You're a hater.
Yeah. And I don't want to bag on something that's like beloved to a lot of people, because I realize that like nostalgia plays a big role in all of the things that we like. And we will certainly play games that I have nostalgia for that maybe don't hold up well. But it's just like, when you don't have that nostalgia and you're coming at this game used to some of the modern conveniences that we have in video games, it's hard to be like, oh no, but it's worth it because it's a classic.
I would say that, so the reason that people would call these classics in my mind is because they were foundational, and there is things that you can see in the history of the medium being developed here.
But when you didn't watch that medium be developed, it's kind of meaningless.
Oh, sure. But I think you can still appreciate a lot of the, well, maybe you can't. But I think that I would explain it as looking back at foundational literature in English novels and whatever, right? If you look at Jane Eyre, reading it back then to now, people now would not enjoy it that much.
I love Jane Eyre.
I know. I picked that one especially for you.
Picked a bad example.
But what I mean is it won't have as large of an audience. It won't be as impactful because in some ways its writing has been moved on, improved upon, and mastered. And there's more choice when it comes to that type of literature.
Right.
Whilst back then it was foundational because very few things would have been from that perspective, on that topic, in that detail, which I think is very much what this is. What A Link to the Past is here is the start of what we considered adventure games with an overworld aesthetic and design, which then was foundational in so many other games later because it hit so many interesting ways to play for people, to figure out puzzles, to interact with the environment, to feel like the world was expanding. And I don't think it's good now. I think it was good at the time, which is what you say about most classics, right? And there's still things to learn from it in the sense of what to do and what not to do.
Yeah, I get that. It's just I have also historically had very little patience for that kind of stuff. So like thinking about literature, which is something that I love, I remember very clearly in high school, there were a lot of books that we read that I absolutely hated that were posed to me. I'm like, well, but it's a classic, but it's important. So like, I think immediately of The Great Gatsby. I hate that book.
That book is so boring.
I don't like it. And I don't think that kids should be forced to read it because I think that it makes kids hate reading. And I feel like that about a lot of the books that I had to read in high school. I can't think of any other examples. I honestly don't like a lot of American literature just in general, except for The Scarlet Letter. I like The Scarlet Letter, but like Harriet Beecher Stowe, that shit's just boring. And I understand like its historical importance. Like it's important to understand why it was so impactful and how it changed the medium. But I also feel like I could get that from reading just a couple chapters of Uncle Tom's Cabin or just playing a little bit of A Link to the Past. You know, I don't feel like I need to put myself through a 20-hour game just to be like, oh, but yeah, I see why it was so impactful.
Well, maybe jumping from that point then, you never got to the point which I think most people saw the importance and the foundational like epicness of this.
Sure.
Which I'm assuming you know.
Yeah, I know.
which is essentially that there is a, so you have the overworld, which is where everything goes on. It's being taken over slowly. And there is also, which is considered the light world, but there is also a dark world, overworld. That's a lot of worlds. Essentially speaking, there's the overworld is the whole map. And there are two versions of it, one which is in the realm of light and one is which is in the realm of dark.
Sounds like some Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff here.
Japan in the 90s. Just in the sense of the world map was so much bigger than just what you saw. And the map was already big for the time. Essentially, each, as a slight description of what the map was like, the player would be on like one square to interact with, and then they would transition to a new square each time they moved like into an entrance exit.
Yeah.
So that also helped that world feel quite big because you would be going like long journeys up and up. And all of it was very much physical in a place. It wasn't as if they were tricking you, or at least they weren't tricking you in the sense of if you were going up this castle, it was as tall and as many squares up as it would be to try and go up the mountain next to it. So that felt large already. But then when it was like, there's another whole different version of this map in a dark world comparison, where things have changed, where people are like corrupted versions of themselves, or the town is completely destroyed, and there are worse monsters out there. That was like a real, I remember at the time, actually, when I finally got to that point, I was like, as a kid going, whoa, I want to explore it all, in that sense of wonder.
The parallel I can think of is, as a kid, I said in the pitch, I played Pokemon Silver was like one of my first.
Oh,
like,
I know where you're going.
So like doing a bunch, I figured out it was there before I had finished the Johto region, but like figuring out like, wait, Kanto is here? Like, I get to play a whole nother game. Yeah, so, like, I get that, and I get the importance of that, but one of the faults that I'll bring against A Link to the Past, and again, I didn't play the whole thing, the story is not exactly, like, gripping. Like, I don't feel an attachment to the characters or the world.
92.
I know.
30 years ago, we have developed. Oh, don't worry.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, 31, technically. Waiting for my birthday.
My siblings were born in 92. They're twins, and their birthday was in November. And, like, I asked them, like, several times, like, are you okay? Like, are you ready? Are you ready? Like, and they were like, no, this is fine. Like, this is okay. I'm like, I'm terrified for you.
I'm 30 and feeling fine.
30, flirty, and thriving. No, I'm just like, I'm terrified about aging, and I feel like more of an elder every single day. And it's just, I have a problem with aging. Listen, I'm a woman, and we have an expiration date, so...
I'd love how you talk about yourself as an elder and then like a teacher. I mean,
I spend all my day with 12-year-olds. Of course I feel old all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you're always going to be older and the elder figure anyway.
And I understand that A Link to the Past is like important and significant, but that doesn't mean I have to fucking play it.
I mean, you're making it sound like me pitching this to you was like my main I had to find a reason for you to play a game that you wanted to try.
So, like, I suggested putting this game on the list, too, is the thing. Because, like, I want to like a Zelda game. It's just they don't make it easy.
I actually have another pitch for you for a different Zelda game.
Oh,
just
no.
Based on what you mentioned. This is Zelda 2, yes.
I mean, like, with my track record, I would probably like Zelda 2, so...
I see what they were trying to do here. It was quite cool. We just failed. I am curious to see if you would actually enjoy A Link Between Worlds, because it might actually have solved some of the issues that you have, because it is a very different feeling, that sense of you choosing your own progression, not being funneled as much, which most of the... like 90s, early 2000s Zelda games very much did, and this one didn't. It very much took the aesthetic and the style of the old original Zelda games and then put newer spins on it, which makes me think maybe that would be enough to make you enjoy it.
Sure, and I do have like some level of nostalgia for like the pixel art of this era. Like Oracle of the Ages, like I said, was one that I played a lot as a kid. So like that style, I enjoy that. I like the art of this game. I didn't really care for the music, but I feel like that's where I can acknowledge that like I'm coming at this from a modern perspective, where like the SNES sound font doesn't sound that great these days.
Oh, God,
and,
yeah.
But I can see how playing a game like that in the 1990s and having this like bombastic music coming at you in this like big adventure. I can get that. I can see that. Have you played Twilight Princess?
Yes, I have played most Zelda games.
That's one I've always been curious about. Like, this is the thing. Like, I don't like Zelda games and it always is the same thing, but God, do I keep playing them.
I would say that actually probably says a lot, though, because that means there's something in it. Maybe it's the sense of exploration or adventure or the feeling of having, you know, new powers all the time. But it clearly means that there's something that you want to like about it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, if you keep poking, you'll find it. I mean, you found it with Breath of the Wild, I suppose, but I'm curious if some of the original stylings might have... classic versions of Zelda, if some of those new experimented ways of playing it would help like make you love them and figure it out. But yeah, that's I don't think Twilight Princess will do that for you.
Okay.
But I'm interested in Majora's Mask, because you've mentioned an interest in that.
I am interested in that one. And this came up when I was trying to play Ocarina of Time as well, that Joe said the 3DS ports of those games, Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, are like they fix a lot of things that are frustrating for people coming at those games with modern eyes, like having to use the C stick on the C pad, whatever it's called. It's not the C stick, that's the 3DS, but like those yellow arrow buttons on the N64 controller,
yeah.
Those controlling the camera in Ocarina of Time is like unforgivable from a modern perspective. So he suggested that I try the 3DS ones because apparently they make a lot of that more bearable.
I never played Ocarina of Time on the 3DS, but I did play Majora's Mask on the 3DS.
Okay.
I had both originally played those on N64 and never finished them. Very much back then, if you got very frustrated with games, you gave up and you didn't play anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the modern sensibilities of them probably would help alleviate a number of the pains you're having. I finished Majora's Mask and I didn't find it a pain. And it actually helped me have less of the frustrations from what I did as a kid.
Okay.
So yeah, I think it's worth a talk about which ones we should throw at you.
Yeah, and in my perception, and this is largely colored by like when I was growing up, Twilight Princess to me feels like the first modern Zelda. And I don't know if that's true, but it was the one that like I was reading Nintendo Power at the time and like following the release of it. And like, I wouldn't say was caught in the hype cycle of that game, but was like aware of the hype around that game. And so that one still feels to me like a newer Zelda.
Sure. I mean... my favorite still, I think, in terms of partly nostalgia, but also partly replaying it on the Wii U, is Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, because...
Yeah, I should try that one.
It's got that sense of, I don't know, it feels like it knew what it was doing. It's still got problems, which are definitely fixed by the HD remake version of it in terms of progression, but it just had a greater sense of place and purpose. So I think there's something in Wind Waker that you might like. That's one of the benefits of the whole Legend of Zelda series, is each of them tries something new in that formula. And in a way, it means it's really hard if you bounce off of one, because you think, I won't like any of the others, probably. I think there's one out there for you, Cass, basically.
I hope.
But hopefully we're going to narrow it down further than you having to try every single one of them.
I really thought it would be Breath of the Wild. And like, I have lately been watching somebody play Breath of the Wild a lot, because a streamer that I like has been playing a lot of Breath of the Wild. So like, I think about that game fondly.
It's interesting because the dungeons are very much self-contained puzzle rooms, escape rooms in a way, actually. Yeah. As a modern,
I've never been to one of those either.
Oh, well, I can I do that as a pitch and play?
An escape room? Oh, I don't think I would have fun at one, though. I think I would just be like, this is stupid. Like, just
open the door. Let me go.
Yeah, like, let me leave. Why did I pay for this? I also, like, this feels related. This might be the fever speaking, but I also feel this way about card games. I don't like card games like Crazy Eights or like any of that. I don't like those because they just feel so manufactured to me and like meaningless. Like, oh, we're just going to put these little pieces of paper down? Like, this is stupid. I want to play like a real game that matters.
Didn't you say that you play solitaire quite a lot?
Yeah, but that's
the old person's card game.
I don't play that as like a community activity. That's like me trying to waste time or like distract myself from catastrophizing. That's why I play solitaire. I don't like get together with friends and say like, let's play some solitaire or any of those card games, because like to me, like that's not an enjoyable way to spend my time with other people. I know that my whole like card games are stupid and they don't matter thing doesn't hold water.
I've got one question which is definitely completely out there.
Uh-huh.
Do you like playing with other people?
Like in general? Honestly?
Yeah. Because maybe that's more the problem.
I don't know. Like
that amount of sighing is not a good sign.
There are games that I enjoy. Like, I like Carcassonne a lot. We play a lot of Carcassonne in the house. I like doing puzzles with other people. There are board games that I like and that I enjoy playing, but I think, I don't know. I think I have a tendency when it's like, I'm not enjoying myself on this thing to turn that into like, well, this thing is bad.
Yeah, I think that's going to be evident in how many episodes of podcasts we have. I mean, you literally apologized for Wait for It.
Immortality
feelings.
But so, like immortality, I don't know. I have very complicated feelings about that game. But I also like the way that I feel about immortality right now, where it was like I hated playing it, but now I've like kind of convinced myself maybe immortality is good. Maybe there are some interesting things in there. I feel like that's maybe how I feel about Breath of the Wild now, because like I had a lot of problems with Breath of the Wild when I was playing Breath of the Wild, but now years on, I'm like, you know, maybe Breath of the Wild's okay. Maybe Breath of the Wild. Like, maybe I didn't give it a fair shake. Maybe I should try Breath of the Wild again. And inevitably, I'll try Breath of the Wild again and be like, oh, wait, I hate this. Also, a lot of what I liked about Breath of the Wild was the dress up. I liked getting new clothes.
I can understand that. I'm interested to see if you have this reaction to A Link to the Past.
Do you feel that A Link to the Past has like a good story?
For the time?
Or does it just have a story?
I mean, its story is simple as heck. I mean, there's nothing deep about it. What is always interesting about the more classic Zelda games is not the main story. It's the sort of little lives of the villagers and the people you meet along the way. You know, they've got very simple aims of, oh, I want to feed my chickens. Can you get me some powder from the forest to feed my chickens?
Ugh.
Or there's a lumberjack. And These games give very much a sense of time progression. Often during your adventure, as you complete dungeons, the world does change. Which, again, back then, not really a thing. But
still
even now,
today.
Even now, the idea of a progression that happens of, you know, a character's cut down a tree, you now have access to this new area, and they've gone off to, like, rest somewhere. And maybe now they get ill because they've overstressed themselves and you've got to find a potion. They give you a heart piece for that. All of these things which add that sense of everyone's lives matter in this. And it's not just that they're just simple pixels. It gives a depth to their experience. They are characters more than they are obstacles in your way or NPCs in a way.
Sure.
At least in the most generous sense, because, yeah, there's nothing deep about their characters. It's just they're doing one job and they get to it. But I think that simplicity is there because the games were made to be about puzzles and adventure and your adventure, not someone else's. So you're still the protagonist, you're the hero, and there's nothing more to it than that. So if you don't feel that sense of adventure and heroism, I don't think it's going to suddenly mean that the game feels better, because that's the whole point of it, you know?
Sure. And come to think of it, that was a problem I had with Breath of the Wild, that I'm like, there's not a story here that's interesting to me.
That one's actually worse in a way, because it's so big, it's hard to grasp onto a story in particular.
And so much of the story is in the past, you know, it's like flashing back to things that have already happened. And I had a lot of problems with the way the character of Zelda was handled in that game, and problems that I'm sure I would have had. Yeah, the whole time. That's like her whole fucking job.
Link.
And like, so I think that she's like Navi almost. I think I would have had that problem too with A Link to the Past, but like Breath of the Wild, one of the things that really frustrated me was that it felt like it was Zelda's game, but it wasn't ready to do that. You know, like it was Zelda's story, maybe I should say. It was Zelda's story.
Oh, definitely.
But you're still playing as Link. Yeah, yeah. And so like that too, that like I need to have characters that I care about, like, and my point being that like I can sit through gameplay that doesn't interest me if the story is good, and I can sit through a bad story if the gameplay is good, but neither of those really clicked for me with A Link to the Past. Like the gameplay feels dated, it feels imprecise, it feels difficult to control, and again, you know, I'm not playing it under the circumstances in which it released, but you know, it felt clunky in a lot of ways. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and it's a 30-year-old game, so of course it's going to. But like, so that wasn't clicking, the story wasn't clicking. So if all that I have left is just, this game is important, yeah.
You're like, cool.
Great.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You're glad it exists, presumably, just for its ability to have made change, not because you cared about it.
And I'm glad that people have that experience of, like, this was the game that I was really like, oh my God, games can do, like, crazy things. Because I feel like that was a lot of what I liked about Fable. That, like, that was the game for me that I was like, wow, this is just, like, a world I want to be in. There's cool stuff happening here, and it was enjoyable for me. So I wonder if Fable came out in 2004. I wonder if in 2034 I had somebody play Fable, if they would have this like problem that I have with A Link to the Past. But I also feel very resistant to ever being that person that says like, oh, but this is a classic. You've got to check it out. Like you have to know about this. You have to care about this thing. Joe just texted me to say, to add to the imprecise controls, you had trouble picking up pots. I did. You had to be on like the exact square with the pot to pick it up. He says, even when they were against walls. Yeah.
We need to get him on sometimes. Just for the Zelda chat.
No, I can't do that because I get really mean when I play Zelda games because I just get like frustrated by them. They just like, they make me angry.
Yeah. I would say like, if I was advising someone as a game designer to look at the history of games, if I was maybe making a course to do with game design, I'm not necessarily saying I would put A Link to the Past on that list of things to look at about foundational...
It's like things to be aware of.
Sure. I mean, but what I'm saying is you can get the idea as a teacher, right? Of if you're going to tell someone to look at, essentially research and look at different forms of your medium to give a sense of what the history of this medium has been, you would recommend them things from 100 to 200 years ago, not just modern things, because the modern things are very good at what they do. You would give them older text because it's a way to learn from them, to understand our progression as a collective.
But that's in a, like, research and productive standpoint. I'm talking from, like, an entertainment standpoint that, like, it always...
Oh, sure.
It always frustrated me growing up, like, when... I'm going to use Goodfellas as an example. Goodfellas is always, and like The Godfather, you can tell that I'm from an Italian-American family, that like those were always the movies that were pitched to me as like, these are classics, like great movies. You've got to see them. And I fell asleep during Goodfellas, and it was, I fall asleep during most movies, but it was just, it was boring. It was not an interesting thing for me to watch. I did not enjoy it. And I don't care that it's a classic if it's not enjoyable for me to watch. So I never want to be that person that says like, it's a classic, you have to see it. I've been talking about Star Wars a lot with my students because we're reading a book that mentions Star Wars. And I'm a big Star Wars fan, but I'm trying to be conscious of not saying like, oh, well, Star Wars is a classic. You have to watch Star Wars. How have you not seen Star Wars? You know, I don't want to be that person.
I mean it more as a, what a classic mean, and this is a wider topic, but what, when people say it's a classic can mean different things depending on the context. If you mean this is a good film or a good book to consume, no, most classics are not good because they don't deal with things that you care about now. They don't have the same like style of telling a story. They don't have, they're clunky or they're not as refined. You know, they're experimental potentially. But if you're going in as a classic for, this is foundational for something that you're really interested in, like you're going to write for, I don't know, if you're really interested in an English literature degree, you have to look at these things because this is part of now your expertise.
You have to read some Shakespeare.
Yeah, you have to. And it's that sense of, I'd never actually recommend this to you if it was purely for entertainment. I'm doing this for a podcast and your own benefit.
It's for this scholarly pursuit that we find ourselves in.
I mean, exactly. But it's also a good way to talk about stuff with, I mean, it's good that we're doing it rather than telling other people to do it, right? That's partly the other reason. And we can give context because we know more about these games. And it's that sense of, you can learn from these things, even if it's very indirect, even if it's not like playing it, just the very act that they're still being consumed by someone and being talked about and why they're being talked about, and not just simply like, it's a classic for no other reason than to sound aloof.
I think I would almost rather watch somebody play this game and like talk about it from a game design perspective. Like that to me is the way to consume it. That like, I'm thinking back to my coursework in English literature and like, we've read Shakespeare, yes, for the like entertainment value of it. And that's a tricky thing with Shakespeare too, because there's this whole like school of thought of like, well, Shakespeare was never meant to be like dissected by college students. It was meant to be like enjoyed and performed and all of that. And so like, we read it just for the enjoyment of the story, but we also read it from the perspective of like, here's what he's doing with language. And like, this is why this was so like innovative and how this like laid the foundation for like where literature would go from here and why we still talk about him today. So like, I would rather consume this game from that perspective, like not necessarily from the entertainment perspective, but from the perspective of like, this was the first game to do this, or like, this is why this was so impressive at the time. I'm lacking that context. And so without that context and without that nostalgia for the era, or even like knowledge of the era, like, I don't mean to sound ignorant, but I don't know a lot about the SNES era because it was over by the time I was born. Like, I grew up in like the N64 PS2 Xbox era, so like, I don't have the context to understand this game, and I don't enjoy this style of game.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
I don't mean to sound like petulant. I know I'm bagging on this game.
I think it's more of a just trying to understand the context of where you're coming from, which, yeah, as an entertainment piece, not that interesting in 2023.
Yeah.
But yeah, mainly was talking about it as a sense of historical importance, but yeah, that varies for everyone.
So, like, do you like this game? Would you replay this game?
No.
Okay. Did you like it when you played it when you were 10?
I mean, no, but as I mentioned, I kept at it and I did enjoy it, but I would never go back to it. It's not one of those games which I have nostalgia for particularly, but it's something which I feel like we're doing now is interesting to talk about still. It's not something which I would go, there's nothing to talk about, this is worthless to discuss. I still think there's a lot of value in this game as what it is.
Right.
I'm not saying it's more than that, but what it is interesting enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's just like, I can separate, like, this is a game that was important to me when I was this age versus, like, this is a game that's important to video games.
Mm.
And yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm also just frustrated, which is external to this podcast and to you. I feel like I am frustrated by, like, the modern discourse around this game that I see in a lot of gaming circles, which are largely populated by white men in their, like, late 30s, early 40s, and they have a lot of reverence for this game. And so I've just, like, I hear constantly about, like, oh, A Link to the Past is my favorite game of all time. It's so worth it. It's so good. And I think that those people are just having a lot of trouble stepping outside of their own relationship to it and looking at it from a fresh perspective.
I wouldn't want to take that nostalgia away from them, though.
No, of course not.
It's that sense of, you do get bogged down in the rose-tintedness of your past experiences, and especially when you're a kid, if you really like something, it will just be there forever, potentially. People are less critical often on things that they're nostalgic about, but I also think it's something you can't really not... Like, I don't think you can be very critical of something and nostalgic of it, because no matter how you frame it, your bias of the nostalgia can never make you very deconstructive about it, because you will always see it in a better way of, oh, why is the opening really a slog of having a lantern and you don't leave for ages? It's like, it's the experience. You feel tense and you feel powerless. And it's like, true, but you're coming from a particular perspective of that. You're not looking at, well, what's the opposite? Why is it bad? It's like, no, 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 it's good. They do it well. So yeah, there's totally a thing of people will be really nostalgic about stuff and that will override stuff. But I guess this is more for you of that's what you're seeing, but everyone's got that for every game. Yeah. Everyone's got like that
baggage. I'm not saying it's wrong to have those experiences, but I feel like that is very much like the sort of monolithic experience that we get from a lot of gaming press. Because again, that the gaming press, like professional gaming press, if that even is a thing anymore, is very homogeneous. Or has been very homogeneous. And so, like, it's just...
Is that how Americans say homogeneous?
It's the way I say it.
Fine.
It is very homogeneous. So, like, it's not so much I begrudge people for having those experiences and having that nostalgia, because I have nostalgia for things. I have things that I acknowledge are like, this probably isn't very good, but goddamn isn't one of my favorite things of all time. I think it's just that I don't appreciate when that perspective is presented as like the end all be all and as like, this is how everyone feels clearly, because I don't feel like I fit into that mold. And so maybe I just have like an instant knee jerk reaction against a lot of that stuff. And maybe I just don't like Zelda games.
Maybe we will find out.
I keep trying though. I don't know what it is.
We will try again.
I want to like one of these. I think about Mario, which is like Nintendo's other big franchise. I have no inclination to be like, I want to find the Mario game that I like, because I know that I don't like any of them. I don't know what it is about Zelda. I guess it is a series that has grown and evolved and changed a lot over the years, whereas and Mario has evolved a lot over the years too. I'm not saying that it hasn't, but not in the way that I think Zelda has.
Yeah, I think I agree on that.
You know, obviously Mario 64 was like a big deal, but when you look at Mario 64 and Mario Odyssey, yes, there is change and growth there, but it's not to the extent of comparing like Ocarina of Time to Breath of the Wild, because those are totally different games.
Yeah.
I have one more question about A Link to the Past.
Not long enough, is it? Go on.
Is Ganon like the big bad in this game?
Yes. This is when he's the pig.
Is this the first time he's a pig?
No. I believe I think he's the main villain of the first game.
Okay.
And they just keep the thing up until they change him into a humanoid human person.
Do they?
At some point.
Do they explain at all why he is a pig?
Are you seriously asking for continuity in the Zelda games?
No, not seriously.
We've been through that controversy.
Not seriously. It's just that, like, I did not know that Ganon was a pig until, like, recently. It's like when I found out in Dragon Ball Z that they turn into monkeys. I didn't know that. I feel like nobody talks about that. I didn't know Ganon was a pig until, I think, when we were watching the Griffin McElroy playthrough of A Link to the Past, and he was like, now it's time to fight the pig. And I was like, what? So, as much cultural, like, osmosis has happened with this series, I didn't know that Ganon was a pig.
I think the logic is just he's a demon. Like, in terms of the whole spun together, like, plot line that they've made of the Zelda universe, he's originally a force of nature, like, called Calamity, and everything afterwards is a reincarnation of this figure who, I guess, in some ways is, like, born as a demon pig monster. And sometimes he's born as a human, depending on how he's born. Let's be honest, there is no reason.
Okay.
It's just...
Yeah,
that's what they did.
Send us angry tweets about why Ganon is a pig.
If there's an actual reason, go for it. Otherwise, I can make one up for you.
And also, I know that there is an actual reason for this one, but I like that Link's hair is pink in this game.
Is it? I don't remember that. Ooh. Okay, you've made me interested in Link to the Past again.
Yeah, his hair is pink because they had, like, a limited color palettes. Yeah, so I just, like, I really do try, and I don't want to seem negative. I really hate that this podcast so far has been, like, 50% me bagging on things. But I did not enjoy my time with A Link to the Past, and I really wanted to, but it's just not there for me.
Don't worry, I'm sure in 2 weeks' time you'll come back and go, actually, it wasn't as bad as I thought, or as we'll call it from now on, the immortality effect.
What I really need to do is just, like, play these back. It's good that I have a recording now, because I can play it back and be like, no, you didn't like this. This is how you felt. Remember how you felt. I think it's also that, like, I start psychoanalyzing myself every time I don't like something. I'm like, what if I'm the problem? What if I'm just, like, too stupid for these games, or I don't have the patience for these games? And I think that is to some extent true, but I also think it is partly a problem with the game.
Without going too deep into anything else, your initial reaction says something, and that's useful to learn from.
And I don't think
doesn't
that,
mean
like,
it's wrong.
I don't think emotions are... This is getting, like... I probably have a fever. I don't think emotions are ever wrong. You know, like, I don't think you're wrong for feeling anything anytime. There are emotions that are maybe not rational or, like, worth vocalizing or maybe worth recording. But, but, you know, it's just, this is my hot take on A Link to the Past. I didn't like it. Sorry.
And that's fine.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for vindicating me. I was just waiting for somebody to give me permission to not like A Link to the Past.
You can dislike games. It's fine.
Okay. Speaking of disliking games, the game I have for you, Ross, is The Order 1886. So I'm going to talk a little history with The Order 1886. The Order 1886 was not quite a PS4 launch title, but pretty close to it. The PS4 came out in November of 2014, and The Order 1886 came out in February of 2015. So it was very much like in the marketing cycle for the PS4. And I was very heavily following video game press at the time. I was involved in like the video game hype cycle, kind of. I bought a PS4 on launch, which is something that I've never done like before or since with a console, bought it on launch. So a large part of why I bought my PS4 on launch was to play The Order 1886. So The Order 1886 was developed by Ready at Dawn. They really did not have a stellar record prior to The Order 1886. I want to say that they developed like a couple of PSP titles, like the Daxter game, I think was them.
They were offshoots from other Sony brands at the time.
They were kind of like a Sony mercenary brands that like Sony would just kind of like contract them. Yeah, they did a God of War PSP game and Daxter. Not games that I think people really love. Yeah, they did God of War Chains of Olympus and the God of War Origins collection on the PS3. And they did a God of War Ghost of Sparta. Jesus Christ, there are a lot of God of War games.
Yeah.
So I believe it was in like the 2010s that they started work on the Order 1886. And this was their first like big scope. They built the engine themselves and it was like going to be like a big Sony release.
Yeah, clearly a lot of investment was put into them.
Yes. And to start off, like this game looks incredible. Like I there are critiques that I'm sure that we can get into about like the aspect ratio of this game, but like from a visual quality standpoint, especially for 2014, this game looked amazing.
Yeah, even at the time I remember this being a like, this is on a console?
Yeah.
Damn, yeah. This is nice. This isn't just a tech demo?
Yeah, right. I remember that. It kind of is a tech demo. So I was very much wrapped up into the video game hype cycle. I was like really excited by what I was seeing graphically. And I really like enjoyed what I was seeing as far as the characters and the interactions and the setting. Now, I'm not normally a fan of like steampunk, I would say, and this game like kind of teeters on the edge of steampunk. The premise of it is that it is the year 1886, but it's like an alternate universe sort of in which the Industrial Revolution happened early and that the Knights of the Round Table, like the King Arthur Knights of the Old Round Table, we're talking about King Arthur a lot after like Fable and now this. I don't like have any particular reverence for King Arthur stuff, but I like when it's in video games apparently. So the Knights of the Round Table have this thing that like makes them immortal called Blackwater. And so they are kind of this like almost like police force, I would say, trying to respond to like weird threats of the... what do they call them? It starts out just as like rebels, but eventually it becomes this storyline with like werewolves and Jack the Ripper and vampires. And so like very much playing upon like English history and like Tesla shows up, you know, like kind of taking like big things from history and sort of playing.
Nikola Tesla, by the way, yes, not the company that exists. just because that's a thing that you have to remind people.
I wish it wasn't. Yeah. So like there's a lot of like alternate universe stuff going on here and like alternate history things going on. But I really liked some of the character designs and like the interactions that they were building up. And I like a story game and it seemed like it would have a cool story. So I pre-ordered this game. I spent $80 on it. I got like a collector's edition that came with a statue. There was base game, second tier, which was the $80 one, which is the one I got. And then there was like an even bigger one that I did not purchase. So like, I didn't go all the way in. When the review embargo lifted, which was like a couple days before the game came out, there was a lot of press coming out about like this game looks really good, but it is short and there is a lot here that is not resolved and there are a lot of quick time events and the combat is just like generally not interesting. And I feel like everybody needs to have one game where they learn their lesson about video game hype. And this was mine because I looked at all of those reviews and I was like, these people are wrong. They don't know what they're talking about. This game is going to be a banger. And I spent my $80 on it and I liked it. You know, it definitely did not deliver on everything that I thought it would. And there's definitely a lot of like shooting gallery segments to this game where it's just like, okay, you're in cover, just like shoot all the guys that show up. But I do think that it told an interesting story. And I especially think that this game is valuable now that you can pick it up for like $6. Because for $6, I think it's a hell of a game to play. And as I get older, you know, I kind of appreciate games that
tell their story and then just like leave it at that. You know, I appreciate a game that like knows like I'm going to be a 15 hour game and that's all I got to be. And that's fine. I don't think that this was a game that was that length intentionally. I think that there was just a lot like that they bit off more than they can chew. But I am very curious to see what you think about this game as somebody who is playing it and not spending $80 on it and not wrapped up in the reputation of it. I've played this game twice, for the record. I played it the first time around and enjoyed it. And then like a month later, I played it with my now boyfriend. This was before we were like together. We played it. So maybe I have, we played the Order 86. What a special.
Oh, so many romances have started that way.
I'm going to say we're probably the only one. But, you know, it's not like the game was what brought us closer to each other. It was not like that. But
the way that you shot that vampire's head off. Oh, I love you even more.
But like, it's just like, you know, it's a fun game. It's like a... I think we've lost like the B game. And I think that in any other situation, this would be a B game.
So your pitch essentially is
it's a fun B game.
Interesting B game from 2014.
Yeah. And I'm also like, I haven't played it since 2015. So I am interested to see like how it has held up, because I'll be honest, like a lot of playing it was the spectacle of just like, it looks really good.
Sure. Yeah, I can imagine. Is there anything else you want to say? Is there anything more you want to say?
What questions do you have about the Order 1886?
Primarily, I know that it didn't go anywhere after this, probably from bad reception and sales. I guess what I'm really curious is what was it that convinced you? Because I feel like you said that you looked forward to it, but I don't know why.
I think I found the like setting interesting. I found the premise interesting. I really liked the design of some of the characters. I liked the like suggestion of like a forbidden romance between like the main guy, what's his name? Galahad, the main guy and the main lady. I love a forbidden romance story. like a we love each other, but we're not allowed to. That's like my shit. So that that got me interested. And I like I said, I was just like, I was very wrapped up in the like video game news cycle at the time. And this was a game that was receiving a lot of press. Like it was it was hyped up to some degree by the press. It was really only when the reviews started coming out that people were like, oh, maybe not.
Okay. Apart from that, so you say it's like from what I remember, this is very much like a corridor shooter type experience.
Yeah,
so
it's a third person cover shooter. Yeah.
Yeah, cover shooter. So does it do anything else? Like, I know Gears of War is very much the template for cover shooters. So you just like shoot things and move to the next area, shoot things. But is there any other interaction that happens in the game?
There are some interesting weapons, I will say, that are like kind of innovative. Like there's a thermite rifle where you shoot thermite, which I believe might be a real thing. You shoot this like dust at people and then like it sets on fire. There's like a lightning gun. So it's not just like, oh, you have a shotgun and a pistol. So it is doing some interesting things with that. There are some stealth sections to the game. The stealth sections are... not good. You can form your own opinion on them, but I believe the critical consensus was they were not good. Any like instant fail stealth section is like not good, but there's a lot of quick time events, which is primarily what the boss fights are, unfortunately. And that feels a little weird because I feel like by like 2014, 2015, we had kind of accepted that like QTEs were not where gaming was going. So like as much as this is a modern game in terms of like graphics, at least modern for 2015, in terms of gameplay, I think it's pretty standard. Aside from that, like interaction with the world, the most that I can remember other than that was that there are like artifacts that you pick up. Maybe not artifacts. I don't know what the word that they use is in the game, but like you pick up items that like just kind of like build out the world and tell you things about the world, you know, like letters that people have written. There's a sack boy that you can pick up at one point from Little Big Planet. And it does that really funny video game thing of like, I just picked this thing up. Let me look at it from every single angle. Like you have the control to like move the character's hand around and be like, I really want to look at the back of this piece of paper.
Okay, cool. So last question, I guess. Should I go into this game with low expectations then?
I would say go into it with the expectations of like, this is a $15 game. That's, I feel like, the real sweet spot for this game.
Okay.
I don't mean to be like a capitalist or anything, but I do think about video games often in like the sense of like
monetary terms.
Yeah. Like, am I getting what I paid for out of this? So if I paid $15 for this game, hell yeah, I'd be satisfied. I'd have a good experience for it. If I paid $80 for this game, maybe I would have some complicated feelings. I would say like go in with the expectation of like I'm gonna like go in with the expectation that you go do you like those Marvel movies do you like those
not many of them.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say like go in with the expectation of like a Marvel movie. Is it gonna be the best thing you've ever seen? Probably not. Is it gonna be entertaining for some people? Yes, not for me, but that's why I was gonna be like, if you like those, go into it with the expectations of like J.J. Abrams is making another Star Wars movie.
You aren't selling it to me, but I'm going to play it.
Of like, well, you know, like, I'll watch it.
I mean, I will say this. I've known for as long as I've known you for quite a while, but yeah. Yes, I've known your obsession with the Order 1886 for quite a bit. So that is all my expectation, is you liking it. No one else has given this much of a care about
Nobody
it.
Nobody else so. Talks about this game.
No.
I really feel like I'm the only one like flying the flag of like, this game's all right. I remember when I was working at GameStop, I had this buddy that worked there with me, Josh, and Josh was just like a cool guy. And I feel like I'm talking about like he's dead. He lives like two houses away from me.
Shout out to Josh.
He's very much alive. Yeah. Hey, Josh. thanks for listening. So Josh, Josh was just like a cool guy that liked everything. Mm. Like anything that he played, he was like, yeah, it was all right. So I lent him my copy of The Order 1886, and he had my copy of The Order 1886 for like 2 years, and I had his copy of God of War for 2 years. And that was like a, you know, when you're straightening the racks at GameStop, you see the games a lot. So you would see The Order 1886 and, you know, you put the little price sticker on it that says $12 and you're like, you know what? Maybe. And then when your friend, your coworker is like, I got a copy that you can borrow and it's in a steelbook because I paid $80 like a fucking idiot for this game. You're like, hell yeah, I'll play The Order 1886. So that's like the... Can you tell that my fever is like escalating?
Yeah, no, I can feel that. You know what? Maybe we should leave it there and we'll talk more.
No, I just need to sip some black water.
Okay. I'm presuming that's a reference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I mentioned that. They drink black water in The Order 1886. That's their like immortality juice. I also, all right. I like stories about immortals.
Okay, I think you can talk more about that in the actual like play section of Pitch and Play.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to finally finding out your obsession.
I'm really looking forward to editing this and seeing how incoherent it sounds, because it really, the fact that we've been through three different methods of recording, it just feels like it's been a wild ride. Yes, so play The Order 1886 and have like mediocre expectations for it.
Cool. I'm going in with mediocre expectations.
I would compare this game to, I've thought of a better analogy. I would compare this game to The Force Unleashed 2. Do you remember when The Force Unleashed 2 came out? And it was like a 12-hour game and like maybe not worth $60, but it was like, you know, it's another one of those.
Cool. I will judge because I have played Force Unleashed 2.
I have not played The Force Unleashed 2. That's on our list.
Then why are you compare? You know what? Forget it. We're ending this here.
Okay.
I will play it.
Bye.
Bye.